Welcome to No Scrubs Allowed podcast, episode 32. And I am here with Eddie, and we have a very special podcast set up for you tonight. How are you doing, Eddie?
Good, man. That 32 number is pretty cool. We have as many episodes as NFL teams. I like it.
Absolutely. We are about to surpass the NFL in a week. That's how good we are. So we have a special podcast set up tonight, but before we get to that point, I want to do the usual things and ask you guys to go ahead and subscribe and rate us. We've got a couple more ratings on iTunes, and so I thank you guys, thank the listeners, but please subscribe, rate. You don't even have to comment if you don't want to. Just go ahead and drop preferably 5 stars. But whatever you want by finding our podcast on iTunes, because I know that's how most of you guys listen. Also, please be sure to follow us on Twitter. We've been very active. Eddie just live streamed the basketball game the other day, right? Or live tweeted?
Yeah, the war on I-4 on Wednesday. Yep, that was me.
Yeah, so we've been live tweeting a lot of UCF stuff, and we've been trying to be more active. We've at least gotten a tweet out every day. I know we're not like Skip Bayless level to where we're tweeting all the time, but we're getting there. Our handle is at NoScrubSports. Instagram, Eddie just posted a few good pictures on Instagram. That handle is NoScrubsAllowedPod. Follow us on Facebook just by searching NoScrubsAllowed. And as always, if you want to contribute, go ahead and just shoot us an email. It's noscrubsports@gmail.com, or you can head over to our website, which is noscrubsallowed.com, and click the contact link on the left side of the page. Those are the best ways to get a hold of us. We just did a Facebook Live that we're going to try to get onto the website soon. I got to figure that one out this weekend. But we answered all your mailbag questions, and we love getting the mailbag questions, so continue to bring that on. Anything else you want to add, Eddie, before we jump into the episode?
No, just really, yeah, I mean, we're going to definitely have some more pictures up. I got to attend the UCF baseball game Friday, so there's definitely more pictures from live sporting events coming, and oh, I know you're... You're attending a cool event tomorrow.
Exactly.
As well.
So we are actually recording. We normally record on Sunday nights, but we're recording on Saturday night, February 17th, because I am going to the NBA G League All-Star Game because I haven't got media credentials and the tickets for the G League game are much cheaper than the All-Star Game. So we're on the low-level media. But I will be there, and I will be wearing my Steve Nash jersey, who was an actual all-star many times over. So I will be trying to get some pictures. Like Eddie said, he got some pictures of UCF baseball. So, yeah, more pictures to come, I'm sure.
Good deal, man. Let's do this thing.
All right, so I said this was a special episode, and it is. And that is because we want to reach out and thank our Canadian listeners. We thanked our listeners as a whole with the mailbag and the 1,000 visitors to the website and all that big stuff. And obviously the United States is a big portion of that. And we love our United States listeners, obviously, because they're our good friends, our close friends. But Canada is number two, and they're pretty far ahead of the rest of the countries. They have 36 views so far this year, which is a clear second. Third place is 7. And they had almost 30 last year, which was pretty good considering we didn't even have a lot last year. I know, Eddie, that we have both been to Canada. But we've been to different parts. I've been to the western part of Canada in Vancouver. You've been to more the eastern part of Canada. What are your views of just Canada as a country?
I really like it. Obviously, I'm happy to live in America, but if I had to live in another country, if I was told you got to move somewhere that is not the United States tomorrow, Canada would be my top choice. Because there's some familiarity there. I mean, there are certain things that definitely remind me of being in America, yet it's different. Especially if you go into Quebec, where many people are speaking French, and Montreal. I really like Canada. The beer is good. The food's good. It's a beautiful country. Of course, I've been to Niagara Falls, so that's a little biased, right? I've seen a beautiful waterfall, but no, man, just in general, like the Niagara River was really pretty. Seems like a cleaner country than parts of America. But they love their hockey. They are still passionate about sports. If y'all didn't have sports, I'd be disappointed, but I would know I'd be going to a country that loves their sports teams and still cares about that stuff. So, yeah, I like Canada. I really do.
Yeah, I went to Vancouver, which is all the way on the west side, British Columbia, and I went to the Hall of Fame out there, which is really cool. It's not like the big Hall of Fame, but it was the British Columbian Hall of Fame, and got to see a lot of cool things. There were a lot of Winter Olympics, which we're going to talk about, but Canada is quite good at the Winter Olympics, so I got to see a lot of their history there that I didn't actually know a lot about. So that was really cool that I got to see that. Sadly, neither the Canucks nor the Whitecaps were playing games, so I didn't get to go watch any sports, but I did get to go visit the stadiums and got a good look of Vancouver, and it's a nice city in what I believe is a nice country, and I'd love to go see some of the other parts of the country as well. But yes, as you guys can see, this is our Canada tribute episode to thank our Canadian listeners, since we've been on a little thankful mode recently. But before we get into that, we want to cover our stud and scrub of the week, as always. So, Eddie, I will let you take it away. I think this is the first time, at least in podcast form, that our stud of the week is a UCF Knight. Take it away, Eddie.
Yeah, it's crazy to think that after that football season we just had. But no, this guy is very deserving. This guy plays for the UCF basketball team. He's a 6'9", 215-pound senior forward. Actually, his dad is an NBA player who played for the Toronto Raptors at one point. I wonder if our Canadian listeners have guessed this one yet, but no, we're talking about AJ Davis, who is the son of Antonio Davis. AJ Davis is our stud of the week. Why? Well, we're going to count last Sunday because we record on a Sunday, but usually by that point we're evaluating guys before that day.
Right.
Last Sunday at Memphis, a team that UCF had never won at their home court, AJ Davis scored 20 points on 9-10 from the field to go along with 9 rebounds, 4 assists. Very impressive performance. I know you and I were really happy about that because this is a guy that does not always shoot smart shots or make smart decisions despite his great athleticism.
Right.
Just
for
overall
non-UCF fans, this is clearly our most athletic player on the team, but mm-hmm. that doesn't necessarily translate to best player, but we expected coming into the season that he would be one of our best, at least offensive players, but athletically, yeah, he's far and away our best athletic player.
Yeah, so that performance against Memphis to give us a win, a huge win on the road, that was huge. On Wednesday, in our rivalry game, granted, USF is terrible at basketball, but still, they get up for that rivalry game, and it was close until the end when UCF pulled away. But a big reason why we pulled away was AJ Davis. Again, 26 points, which was a career high for him. 9-12 from the field. Hit all three of his three-point attempts, which you and I know when we watch him threes, we don't want to see it happen. But if he's
very
hitting,
unusual, yes.
If he's hitting them, hey, I can live with that. He even hit 5 of 6 free throws, and he's not a great free throw shooter, and he had 9 rebounds. So, again, he was already in the conversation at that point, And then he sealed the deal early this morning. UCF had an early tip-off against SMU, Southern Methodist, for those who don't know. And he had 19 points, 6 of 13 from the field, 4 of 7 on three-pointers, which they said that was a career high for made threes for him in a game. 3 of 5 free throws, but he completed the double-double with 10 rebounds, had a block and a steal, and UCF held SMU to 37 points. And again, all three of these games were wins, and we're going to get into that more later, but this guy finally, Travis, played to his full potential. I'm so proud of him. This is what we've waited for his whole time on UCF, and as a result, he's well-deserving of Stud of the Week. So, UCF listeners, hope you didn't turn it off, because we got a Stud of the Week this week.
Absolutely, and he was a guy coming into the season that he's a senior, right? Junior or senior, one of those.
Yeah, he's a redshirt senior. He was right. A transfer early on. His first year with us, he actually led us in scoring when we were really bad. Last year, he kind of struggled to adapt to Johnny Dawkins' system once Johnny Dawkins took over. And it was frustrating because you knew he had talent. And this year, again, kind of the same thing, but it finally looks like he's putting it together.
Absolutely. So coming into the season, we really wanted him to be a leader for us. And BJ, one of the other guys that we really wanted to be a leader, he went down early. And AJ Davis didn't really step up. He was playing well. He was playing his own way. But we were really relying on Taco Fall early on, and then our freshman. And then Taco Fall went down right around the time that BJ Taylor came back. And it looks like now that Taco Fall is down for the rest of the season, now A.J. Davis is starting to step up. And again, we'll talk about it a little later. This is just the Stud of the Week. But it looks like if A.J. Davis can play at this level, that even without Fall, we might have a shot. But like I said, we'll get at that a little later. But of course, with every stud, there is a scrub. And while we congratulate A.J. Davis for his Stud of the Week, we... I think I speak for both of us, Eddie, when we say this is with a heavy heart that this Scrub of the Week comes out. We both really enjoy this player, but we are subjective or objective while being subjective. And we will call out players that we think are great and that we really like, even if they are being scrubs. And that leads us to the Scrub of the Week this week, Trey Young, for the Oklahoma Sooners basketball team. Just an abysmal week. And since you went back to the end of last week, I'm also going to go back to the end of last week to last Saturday. He was facing unranked Iowa State, and he shot 7 of 21, including 1 of 8 for threes, and they lost. And he also had 6 turnovers. And you were like, well, dang, that kind of stinks, but okay, he's got some big ranked games coming up. He's got to turn it around. Well, his next game on Tuesday against Texas Tech, he went 4 of 16, including 0 of 9 from 3 and 6 turnovers. Unbelievable. But then you were like, okay, well, he's coming back home. He gets to face Texas on Saturday in a home game. He needs to turn it around. Well, what did he do? He went 7 for 21 again, including 3 of 10 from 3. And he only had 3 turnovers, but still another loss. Oklahoma, going back, has lost 5 straight, which is huge. And I know I rattled off a lot of numbers and didn't say anything about his points or assists or all that stuff. He is still scoring well, and I appreciate that about him, but it's a lot due to free throws and things like that, but it's not contributing to wins, and a lot of it's due to his shooting. If you put those three games together, he is 18 of 58 from the field, and an abysmal 4 of 27 from 3 for the week. In huge games, this is crunch time. 2 of those games were against ranked teams that he needed to beat, and he's just unable to do it. Now, we still think that Trey Young is good. Well, I know that I stand behind him. I think you do too. I haven't talked to you after this week, but I know you did like Trey Young. But coming into crunch time, he has to show if he wants to be the next Steph Curry or something like that, he has to have that fire. If you, I know you remember Eddie as a fan, but listeners, when Steph Curry was in college, he didn't have the pedigree of an Oklahoma, but when he was out at Davidson, he had that gene where he went in and played really well in his conference tournaments. He played really well in the NBA or NCAA tournament. And so far, it does not look like Trae Young has that feature. He doesn't have the Kobe Bryant clutch gene, the Steph Curry clutch gene. So, Trae Young, take it now. Take your scrub of the week now and hopefully move forward, because when the pressure starts getting tough, you have to get tougher. And so far, he has not done that.
Yeah, he's well-deserving of scrub of the week, as much as it pains me to say that, because I do like the guy. His game's fun to watch, man. I mean, he really is the closest thing that I have seen to Steph Curry at the collegiate level since Steph suited up for Davidson. So, yeah, I don't know. Like, I've even seen some people on their draft boards, they've really dropped him down. They might have had him close to number one. He's like number seven on one of the ESPN guys' draft boards I was watching the other day. That's discouraging. Like, I almost wonder with him if he just was so good so fast. Some guys don't know how to handle that. And now that the games are getting more crucial, the pressure's on. These other teams you're playing, you know, you're playing against juniors and seniors who this could be it for them in their college basketball career. They really want to finish it strong. I just wonder, does this kid have the fire to, you know, turn this around? I hope he does. The skill set's obviously there, but how you respond to adversity will be big. So if he can respond from a scrub of the week kind of week going forward, that'll say a lot about him. But right now, yeah, he's well deserving this award, and he's got to start to play well again. It's not just the shooting, it's the turnovers. I get he's a high usage guy, but maybe you come off screens more like Steph does from time to time. Steph Curry, as great as he is, I don't think he has the usage rate of a Trae Young.
Absolutely.
Trae Young needs to recognize, hey, maybe having the ball a little less and getting in good positions to score is better for me.
Well, that's not really a Trae Young thing. That's a coach and an Oklahoma thing. Because going back to Davidson, Steph Curry did have a high usage rate. It's just a nature of the beast. But when Trae Young gets into the NBA, which he absolutely will, he is going to have a lower usage rate, and we're both hoping that that helps him out. And another thing that's in his defense, I do want to say, so that I don't get all the listeners just yelling at me. I'm comparing him to Steph Curry at Davidson, but this kid is, I believe he's, I don't want to say his age because I don't know it exactly, but I know he's a freshman. He's very young. Steph Curry was not a freshman when he lit up Davidson. So, yes, there is a little bit of a difference, and Trae Young does have some growing up to do. So, while we're calling him out right now, the fact of the matter is this kid is a freshman, and he is unbelievable. And he is still, with these bad games, still leading the league in points and assists per game. So, I don't want to get that wrong, but this week, definitely, he is the scrub of the week. So, Trae, you got to take that mantle, and you got to turn that around in the coming weeks.
Yes, he does.
Awesome. So we're about to get into our Canada tribute, but before we do that, I want to recognize some stuff that just happened today. I was watching the NBA All-Star Saturday night, and I was really intrigued by the team that, or the guys that won the skills competition and the three-point competition, and something that the announcer said. So Spencer Dinwiddie, a guard from the Brooklyn Nets, and or he won the skills competition, and Devin Booker, the guard from the Phoenix Suns, won the three-point competition. And this announcer said, this should look really good for the fans of these two teams, because both of these teams, the Nets and the Suns, are really bad. But he said they can both look at these two guys that are very good, and obviously very good. Spencer Dinwiddie winning the skills competition proves that, I mean, he has the control, he has the passing, he has the shooting, because the skills competition has all of that stuff. And then Devin Booker, who we know was great, he scored 70 in a game, he can shoot the lights out, he beat the likes of Klay Thompson and Eric Gordon in a three-point shooting contest. So I want to ask you, Eddie, what should the Nets and the Suns fans be hopeful seeing this, or should they just be like, well, I mean, it's All-Star weekend, it's not really a big deal?
It's All-Star weekend, it's not really a big deal. These teams both stink. Until they actually get another star player on their teams, they're going to continue to stink. I think the Suns, Devin Booker is a very good young player. I know you don't want me to say this, but hey, Travis, until you guys get another player, you're going to stink. And same with the Nets. I mean, the Nets, I don't know how their draft pick's going to be affected this year, because we all know about Cleveland and the Brooklyn pick. We've heard about it a gazillion times in the media. I don't know how that's going to affect them, but no, these teams stink until they get another star player. The NBA is a star league, and usually you can't do it with one star unless he's at that LeBron, Durant, Steph Curry level. Both these guys are nice players, but neither of them are at that level, in my opinion.
Well, I think you're wrong, and I know our listeners have actually asked for us to disagree more. And obviously, with a Suns player on that list, I'm going to disagree with you. This is absolutely a sign moving forward. Yeah, it's nothing amazing. It is All-Star weekend. But these guys, Spencer Dinwiddie and Devin Booker, they don't know what it means to win. They don't know what it feels like. They haven't seen or felt that energy, you know. They haven't felt the crowd behind them cheering them on, holding a trophy. These things are huge, and I don't know a lot about the Nets and Spencer Dinwiddie. I'm sure he's a great player, and I know that they're doing better this year than they were. But I do know a little bit about Devin Booker and the Suns, and he is our leader already, and he's only in like his third year, but we have so many young people that we have asked for him to be a leader, and for him to be able to hold this trophy and feel the crowd looking at him because the spotlight is around him.
It's a three-point shooting contest. No,
he knows the feeling now. He can come into this locker room.
Aaron Gordon won the slam dunk contest for the Magic. Guess what? The Magic still stinks.
It's the slam dunk contest. There's a reason I don't have the slam dunk contest in my list here, because it's a stupid competition, and it's about popularity and showmanship. Even though Aaron Gordon had a huge dunk through his legs or whatever he did a few years ago, I don't care about that. That doesn't translate to the game. How many times have you seen him in the game do that double leg under his leg dunk? Never. How many times have you seen Devin Booker shoot a three? Many times. I'm just saying it brings the winning, and to your point, the Orlando Magic are actually slightly better this year than they were before Aaron Gordon won his dunk contest. So maybe it's a thing. But Devin Booker is the leader here, and he's going to come into the locker room, and he is going to tell this team, like, listen, the eyes are on us, man. People are looking at Phoenix because of me, but they're going to look at Phoenix because of us, and we're going to tank this year, and we're going to get another great player, and then when the tanking rules switch next year, we're going to start winning, because we're just, trust the process, Eddie. Trust the Suns process. It worked for Philly, it's going to work for Phoenix.
You are, like, half laughing while you're talking. You don't even believe yourself, Travis.
What? No, I don't believe that the three-point contest means anything, but I do believe that winning a trophy means something for Devin Booker, and I think he's going to bring that in, and it's going to mean something for the Suns. As far as outside of the organization? No, I don't think people are going to go, well, now the Suns have a real shot. No, I don't think that. And that's what's hard for the fans to believe. But in the locker room, I think it means something. I think the fact that people can look onto their leader and go, he is great, and we know he's great. Let's tag behind him, and let's win a few. I'm telling you, we're obviously losing on purpose this year. But our young players are getting better, and I don't want to get on a Suns hype train right now. But I think winning is huge, and he needs to feel how it feels to win. And hopefully, in my view, hopefully that doesn't mean he goes and leaves the Suns for a winning organization, because that would be terrible. If he's like, oh yeah, I like winning, I'm going to go to Golden State and keep winning, that would be pretty bad.
Well, he better shine that trophy and get a nice case, and get one that only fits one trophy, because that's about the only trophy that guy's ever going to win.
Yeah, whatever. He's going to get an MVP, a Finals MVP, a few championship or NBA championship trophies. His trophy case is going to be massive. But anyways, let's move on to our Canada tribute. If you've been listening this long and you still like Canada, we appreciate you, and we want you to keep listening. So, Canada has done a lot of things this past week, and that's kind of what spurred me on to listening or to thinking about doing a Canada episode. Obviously, the Winter Olympics are going on right now, and for lack of a better term, the U.S. kind of stinks at the Winter Olympics. That's just what we do. They created snowboarding so that we could win gold medals. I'm pretty sure that's the reason that they did that. And so far, we are winning gold medals in snowboarding, but nothing else, really. So I kind of want to turn my focus to Canada.
I do want to say one thing. In Canada, you people probably saw this, but we got our butts kicked by the athletes of Russia, the Olympic athletes from Russia in men's hockey. And again, we're going to talk about this with the Canadian team, because you guys know, you're well aware of how this is affecting the tournament, but it's kind of unfair that in a tournament where the NHL players are not playing, that a guy that would surely be on an NHL roster,
oh my gosh,
in a top six role, Ilya Kovalchuk, scoring two goals against Team USA. That guy would be in the NHL today if he wanted to be, but he's in the stupid KHL. I mean, it's weird how that has affected the men's hockey. It would be so much better if the NHL guys were in it, but they're not. So definitely, I was looking at the Team Canada roster for men's, and it's just weird. Like, there's guys that just got out of the league in the NHL, and they're in it.
There is NHL experience in the Olympics.
And some guys who are now on minor league rosters who were in the NHL, who, since they're in the minor leagues, they're able to play. Go figure.
Right. Well, I know, so all of our Canadian listeners, you're going to like Eddie a little more. He's talked a lot about Sidney Crosby. Obviously, Sidney Crosby is his favorite hockey player.
Probably
his favorite athlete. And
Mario Lemieux before that. So
have to be told that he's from Canada. But Eddie took it a step further, and I am going to bring this up. Our American listeners, please bash Eddie. 4 years ago, Eddie, when NHL players were allowed in Olympic hockey, which team were you cheering for to win the Olympic gold medal 4 years ago?
Team Canada.
Team Canada. Eddie Melville, honorary Canadian, was cheering for Team Canada. What do you have to say about that, Eddie?
Hey, man. One, I could root for Team USA if we didn't have John Tortorella as a coach. That guy is a complete buffoon. The coach that should have been the coach was Mike Sullivan, the current Penguins coach, but this was kind of before he was realized as a great NHL coach. And another thing, I think they left Phil Kessel off that team. I don't know, man. Just all those factors tick me off. Team USA is run so poorly. And yeah, I do root for Canada because of Crosby. But, I will say this. I would gladly stand by my real country if Mike Sullivan is the head coach. One, he coaches the Penguins, and two, he actually coaches good hockey. But the clutch and grab, you know, let's just play blue-collar rugged hockey that John Tortorella puts out there is a disgrace to America. That you don't see Team USA doing that in basketball. That's all I got to say.
Well, USA basketball is a different story, but they are clearly better than USA is at hockey. But anyway, so let's talk about Canadians men's hockey. I just watched last night a game against the Czech Republic, and it was a very good game. It went all the way to a shootout, and the Czech Republic team won the shootout. And the Canadian goalie kind of gave me a weird little... He doesn't look that good. No offense, Canada. But the Canadian goalie, I don't know who he is or what he plays or anything like that, but he didn't look that good to me. Yet you guys take it to a shootout. So there's one win and one loss for your Canadian team, but there's no need to be concerned. And Eddie, you said there was a play that you didn't necessarily agree with. What happened there?
Yeah, they were talking about it on Hockey Night in Canada tonight with Don Cherry during the intermission of the Penguins Maple Leafs game. And yeah, the Canadian player was on a breakaway, and there was a guy behind him, but the ruling is if you get slashed from behind on a breakaway and it hinders your ability to shoot, it should be a penalty shot. And I don't know if a penalty wasn't called at all, but there's certainly...
No, there was. I was watching it live and there was nothing called at
all. That's terrible. And that's a joke. I try not to blame refs, but that affects the play. Like, you cannot slash a guy when he's on a breakaway. You just cannot. That's the whole point of a penalty shot. So, Canada...
So, I was watching it live. I was watching it live, and I know less about hockey than Eddie does, and it was already, like, 10:30 or 11 o'clock at night here, so I definitely couldn't text Eddie about it. But I saw the play happening, and I was like, man... Why didn't they call a penalty there? And the announcers weren't talking about it at all. So I kind of wrote it off, and I was like, oh, maybe there wasn't a penalty or anything. And now to see you today, I saw you put it in our podcast notes. And so I went back and I watched it again. And again, that thought just came up. Like I said, I was just laying down watching it half asleep, and I was like, man, I thought that should be a penalty. So if a casual watcher like me even looks up and goes, man, maybe that should be a penalty, then obviously the huge hockey fans would believe that it was a massive, egregious penalty. But in the Czech Republic's defense, Canada didn't look that great in the penalty shootout anyway, so I'm not sure that it would have mattered. But this is a pro-Canada podcast, so I'm not going to talk too much crap about Canada. But they have to get better at penalty shots if they're going to win. But they're going to play South Korea next. They should win. It's not going to be a problem. And so they should make it into the knockout stages without too much difficulty. And I know a lot of – maybe all the teams make it to the knockout stage anyway. I'm not really sure how that works. But the one team that Canada can definitely – fall in on is their women's hockey team. And because this is a pro Canada podcast right now, we're not going to talk about the controversial call that gave Canada the 2-1 win over the United States. But did you actually see that, Eddie?
I have not seen that.
Oh, see, so we don't even have to talk about it. But because we want to be pro Canada. But there was a controversial call that gave Canada the win over the United States in the women's hockey. But women's hockey for Canada is dominating. I'm going to look it up because it's really ridiculous. They have not lost in, I'm going to look up how many years, but they are dominating. So, Eddie, while I'm looking this up, go ahead and give us a quick recap of the women's Canada team and how they're doing.
So, 5-0 over the Olympic athletes from Russia. I'm sorry, that's... I'm sure there's a reason they're being called that, and you might know it.
But... It's because of the doping scandal. So Russia, as a country, is banned from the Olympics. So they still let the athletes play, but any medals that's won by the Olympic athletes from Russia, the country does not get to claim them. So at obviously, the end of this Olympics, Russia still will have no medals, no matter what happens.
It still sounds weird. 4-1 over Finland, 2-1 over the United States. So again, I mean, 3-0 in the preliminaries, and they're set to play the Olympic athletes from Russia in the semifinal. So they're really good. I was really hoping the U.S. team might actually be able to top them with Amanda Kessel, and again, there's a lot of U.S. players, and I'm sure it's the same with Canada, but there's a lot of U.S. players that are related to NHL players, so I mean, I always find that interesting. But yeah, I don't think you Canadians have anything to worry about when it comes to your women's team.
Yeah, so, I mean... The U.S. team does have a shot, and like I said, we lost 2-1, and there was some controversy, but we're going to see them in the finals again, unless something crazy happens, because, like you said, they're facing the Olympic athletes from Russia in the final, or semifinals, and they just beat them 5-0. I think Canada and USA are far and above as far as women's hockey is concerned. So we're going to get to see them again, and I'm sure that will be a huge game.
Yeah, those are definitely the two thoroughbreds of women's hockey. Yep.
All right, well, I can't seem to find this stat, but I did see, I think they haven't lost in like 20 years, which because the Olympics is every 4 years. That's 5 straight Olympics, if I'm remembering correctly, that the Canadians women's team has not even lost, which is unbelievable.
Yeah, that's the closest thing to the men's basketball dream team, pretty much.
Yeah. So the Winter Olympics, I would assume Canada looks for their women's hockey team to really look to almost guarantee a win for themselves. So
yeah,
they won gold in 2014, gold in 2010, gold in 2006, gold in 2002. So that's 4 straight years right there, which I don't know if they won all the games, but that's 4 straight years. Their international record is 256 wins, 47 losses, and 5 ties. So regardless of when they lost, that's an amazing record right there. So, man, the Canadians women hockey team is going to be hard-pressed to lose to either the Olympic athletes from Russia or U.S. or what's the other team, like Sweden or whoever is there.
Yeah. Could
possibly face them. So,
in the Olympics in general for Canada, third in the medal count right now behind Germany and Norway. Always tough to top Norway. It's cold here around there.
Yeah.
It's just cold. Even compared to Canada, I would imagine Norway is colder longer. And then, of course, Germany, it's cold there. And Germany has a lot of great athletes. And 5 gold medals, 1 in curling, 1 in figure skating. Go figure skating. By the way, I didn't watch, but my mom...
And they just... My
mom told me, and our American male in figure skating, he had a terrible first round, and then...
Oh, yes.
And then destroyed people in the second round. Like, this guy should have been a gold medal, but he didn't even qualify to keep moving. which is really sad.
Also, I just saw, I don't know if this is on our notes because we're watching obviously in America, so the events that I'm watching right now has already happened, but there was another Canada gold medal that just happened.
Ooh!
But I think it was in speed skating, and I know you have speed skating on there, so it might be updated on the internet already. But I got to watch the speed skating gold medal that just happened. So, at any rate, there's either five or six, but probably still five. I'm sure the internet was updated before the TV was, but yeah.
Yes, so a lot to be proud of in Canada during this Olympics. And yeah, I know you guys care about hockey the most, and we'll see if your hockey teams, I think the women's, like we said, has a great chance, and your men's, we'll see. It's just a little bit different this time around without the NHL guys.
Yeah, so yeah, Canada knows that they're great at hockey, obviously, but apparently, and it's different because it's not necessarily Canada as a country, but the Canadian representative for the NBA is also really good, apparently, and that is the Toronto Raptors. They are leading the Eastern Conference this year, which has the likes of Kyrie Irving and the Boston Celtics and LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers. Yet, flying under the radar is the Toronto Raptors. And I have a question for you, Eddie. DeMar DeRozan, their star player, obviously they have Kyle Lowry as well and just a great backcourt. He's having a career year. He's averaging 23.7 points a game, 5.2 assists per game. His shooting percentages are the top that they've been so far in his career. And like I said, the Raptors are above the East. Well, I have an MVP list coming out in the coming days before the season starts back up again. And DeMar DeRozan is not even on it. I don't even have him as a potential to the point that I'm describing what he's doing. First of all, do you agree / completely disagree with me about leaving him off the list? And second of all, do you think it's the fact that Toronto is in Canada and the NBA is more of an American sport? Do you think that affects his MVP potential, not only with me, but his real-life MVP potential?
Well, I haven't seen your list. I don't know how long it is.
Seven players have made the list, so, and yeah, he's not on it.
Man, I would think he'd be at least top seven, so I disagree with you there. I think he should at least be in the top seven. However, I do think he is not a true, like, top three, like, MVP candidate, despite the stats. They're impressive. However, I mean, look who's playing. Like, LeBron's up there again, which I know you don't want me to mention that, but he is. Kevin Durant, Steph Curry are in the conversation. James Harden is the leader. I mean, there's already – I just named four guys. The four premier guys are all having great years, and there's other guys right in the mix. So, I don't think it's even playing in Canada. Although I would say if he was really in the top three, that probably would hurt him. And that's not right. I mean, you guys are part of the NBA, and the Raptors have been good for many years in a row. They're a quality franchise. My favorite Raptors memories are Vince Carter, by far.
Absolutely.
I'm sure that met many people north of the border. That's y'all's too. Good for DeRozan. Glad to see him have such a good year. And it just seems like, though, as good as he's done, it's more a collective of the Toronto team, which is good. I mean, they might actually – I still don't see them beating Cleveland, but they could give a team like Boston fits in the playoffs and maybe even beat them.
Definitely. And one thing that's really going for them and going for them playing in Canada, while it might affect his MVP potential in a bad way, it affects their winning potential in a good way. Toronto has the best home court record in the NBA right now. So these teams going up into Canada to play against Toronto, actually it might be second best to Denver, but that's a different reason in Denver. But going into Toronto is tough to play. And the Raptors have the second highest point differential in the NBA behind Houston. And I just want to tag along of my own question. I think that playing in Canada kind of affects him. I think if he was putting up the same numbers and had the same record but was in L.A., I think he would be an MVP candidate. So if his numbers in L.A. plus L.A. having the record that Toronto has, I think DeMar DeRozan would be a top three MVP candidate. But aside from that, I think a lot of it has to do with what you said and what you mentioned briefly. They have done this for years and years and years now, probably, what, 3 or 4 years that they've done this, and it has not translated to playoff wins. And I know the MVP doesn't include the playoffs, but if you're seeing these guys fold in the playoffs over and over and over again, and it's been Lowry and DeRozan for all of these years that they've been good, and they just melt down in the playoffs and lose in the first round or get swept in the second round to Cleveland and things like that, that affects him, I think, more so than living in Canada or playing in Canada.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you there. Shifting gears, again, the Raptors are very good, second highest point differential in the NBA behind Houston, so we will see over the course of the year if, one, they can get that high seed, which would help with the home court, and two, if they actually can translate it into playoff success. But when we're talking about Canada, we're also talking about Canadian NBA players.
Absolutely. So Toronto is the Canadian team, but Lowry and DeRozan are both American players. So we want to talk about best Canadian players. And I think the consensus, and I know that you put that he's having a disappointing year, and he is having a disappointing year, but I think if you asked across the board, the consensus best Canadian player right now has to be Andrew Wiggins. Do you agree with that, Eddie?
Yeah, he definitely is the best Canadian NBA player by far. Even though his numbers are down, he's not shooting the ball well, his points per game is down, and I get some of that is because they added Jimmy Butler, and
right,
I mean, and Minnesota's winning more, so he hasn't been terrible, but he isn't, I figured his percentages would go up playing in an offense where he, not all the pressure's on him, but he actually has not had a great year.
But so I agree with you.
He's by far the most talented guy, though.
I think his numbers going down wouldn't be alarming because of the adding Jimmy Butler, because they're actually winning, and they can allow him to be the defensive guy that he actually was supposed to be when he came into the league. So numbers going down would not be a problem, but like you said, his percentages are going down, and that's not a good thing. So you can have your percentages go up with your numbers going down, and it still looks good for you. But when your percentages are going down, that's not so great. But two really good Canadian players that I actually didn't know either of these guys were Canadian until I started doing research for this podcast. But they both play for the Denver Nuggets, who right now are the sixth seed in the West and looking very good, and obviously the hardest to play at home because of the Mile High Arena. Trey Lyles and Jamal Murray both play for the Denver Nuggets, both averaging double digits. Trey Lyles is 11-5, 11 points, 5 assists per game, which isn't amazing, but they're a full team kind of thing. And Jamal Murray is averaging 16.5 points per game, and both of these guys are young. Jamal Murray's in his second year. I think Trey Lyles is in his third or fourth year. These Canadians, could they take over Andrew Wiggins and just overshadow him? And, I mean, they're helping lead the Denver Nuggets to a playoffs in the West, which is really difficult.
Yeah, I mean, they could definitely overshadow him, especially if they get in the playoffs and if they make some noise. Even if they don't win their first series, but if they gave a team like Houston or Golden State or even San Antonio fits in those, but those two guys were the main reason why, I think they could kind of steal the heart of Canada there.
Absolutely. And just for due diligence purposes, one of the most recognizable Canadian NBA names over recent years has been Kelly Olynyk, mostly due to the fact that he hurt, I don't even remember who it was. I think somebody on the Wizards or something. And he like pulled his elbow out of socket with a really dirty play. It's got to be the Wizards because Joe House likes to give Bill Simmons crap for it. But I don't remember who. But Kelly Olynyk, I think it was game 7 of the Washington game. He went out and he hit like 6 threes and led Boston to the Eastern Conference Finals. Well, Kelly Olynyk's not playing as well this year. He's 11-5. But I wanted to give him a mention because I know a lot of the Canadian listeners will be like, hey, make sure you mention Kelly Olynyk in the NBA players. And he's your classic Canadian white guy. So I wanted to make sure he gets a mention.
Yes. Basketball player with a hockey player's mentality.
Exactly. Well, as we know, before we get into the real sport that Canada cares about, and that's hockey, I want to mention something that Eddie probably wants left out of the podcast, but I was doing research for other Canadian players that are great in the Big Four. I didn't look at soccer, but the Big Four, and I found a really good baseball player by the name of Joey Votto, who I think finished third or fourth in the NL in batting average this year. Eddie, what do you have to say about the great Joey Votto, the Canadian baseball player?
The great Joey Votto is a scrub. And I don't,
what?
I don't mean as a player. He is a good player. But, man, if you watch him, the way he carries himself, I've watched enough Pirates-Reds games and seen how this guy acts. He's a buffoon. He's a hothead, prima donna superstar. I don't like the guy.
Well, I have always liked his MLB Showdown, or Showdown, is that what it's called?
Yes.
I've always liked Joey Votto's card, and many times he's been my leadoff batter in MLB Showdown. So I definitely want to give a shout-out to Joey Votto and the Canadians with the baseball. I also looked at the NFL, and there really wasn't any great players. The best ones I could find active are John Ryan, the punter for the Seattle Seahawks, and Luke Wilson, the tight end for the Seattle Seahawks. So it seems like the Canadians are drifting towards the Seahawks there, but nobody really amazing in the NFL. So you guys need to start scouting some NFL talent up there in Canada.
Absolutely. All right, let's get into it, man. The NHL.
Let's do it. So the NHL is clearly Canada's forte, if you will. But the teams that we expected to do great this year aren't doing quite as great as we expected. However, there are some others that are doing great, if not better, than we expected. So what do you see there with the Canadian hockey teams, Eddie?
Okay, there's two teams that are doing great, in my opinion. One that's doing well, and a bunch that are doing bad. The two doing great would be the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Winnipeg Jets. Toronto Maple Leafs are third in the Atlantic, and I put these stats in here before they lost to the Penguins tonight, but they did have the third most points in the East entering that game. And that's saying a lot, because if you look at the Atlantic Division versus the Metropolitan, the Atlantic, while not as strong top to bottom, the top three there, they have a lot of points in comparison to the Metropolitan Division teams. So 35-19-5 is a really good record. Austin Matthews, despite those injuries, 48 points in 49 games. The guy's only 20 years old, man. This guy is a superstar. In my opinion, easily already a top 2015 player. I know some Canadian listeners probably think, come on, he's top 10. It's a no-brainer. He might be. It's just hard for me to put a guy that high that soon unless he's like Connor McDavid level. But he's a plus 24. That really impresses me. That's, he's playing good two-way hockey. They're deep at forward with Nylander, Marner, Kadri, Van Riemsdyk, and their 500 goal club veteran, Patrick Marleau, who had another goal tonight against the Penguins. That guy is a horse, and I think that was a really smart signing for the Maple Leafs, and I think that could really pay dividends for them in the playoffs. Their defensemen, they're not amazing, but I think they're pretty good puck movers from what I've seen. And their goalie, Frederik Andersen, he's having a strong year. He's not the best goalie, but he's upper echelon, in my opinion. He's up there. He's won 29 games, only lost 16, and lost a couple in the overtime shootout. And he also has a really good save percentage. And he looked good tonight. I know the Penguins peppered him, but he kept you guys in the game. So the Maple Leafs, I know Toronto hasn't won the Cup in a long, long, long time, and there's so much pressure there. As a comparison, Travis, I don't know that there is much of a comparison for the Maple Leafs versus like other teams. Maybe the Philadelphia Eagles media or New York Yankees type media. The New York Yankees is probably a better comparison, but except imagine the Yankees hadn't won in a long time.
Right.
That's how the Toronto media is. So, I mean, these guys eviscerated Phil Kessel when he was there. So, but they do. But with that said, those fans love their team, and they just expect excellence. And again, it's in Toronto's huge city. And it's in the heart of Ontario, and they want to see a Cup winner. I have good news for you people. You guys are a contender, and even if it doesn't happen this year, the Maple Leafs are going to be in the mix for years to come. I'm really impressed with the young talent, and of course, Matthews, I think, could be that generational talent who could push you guys over the top. I actually see a lot of his game in would be a guy like a Mike Modano, which Mike Modano did win a Cup in Dallas, and he scored a lot, but he also had a good plus minus. I think Matthews is a little bit better scorer, but has that similar two way game. That's my opinion.
So real quick, before you move on to another team, I want to address something you said, and you know, Connor McDavid, he might have the effect that Sidney Crosby has on me, to where I start, if they let NHL players back in, I might start cheering for Team Canada. But you said Austin Matthews would not be a top 10 unless he was a Connor McDavid talent. And clearly Canadians won't argue with Connor McDavid's talent. But I just want to ask you just a real quick answer, because it sparked me when you said that. Why are these guys not on the same level for you? I mean, they were both number one draft picks back-to-back years. They're both centers. They're both great scorers. They both put up big points. Why is the Canadian, since we're going to talk about Canada, why is Connor McDavid so much higher up on your list than Austin Matthews, who just 1 year later was still a top pick and obviously one of the better centers in the league?
Well, it's to be clear, it's not because Austin Matthews is American. It's not because of that, but no, I mean, you got to do it consistently, and I know he's been consistent, but I want to see a guy who's well over a point per game. He's not there yet. He's close to there, but I want to see a guy who is easily over a point per game regularly, and he needs to be more of a playmaker. 22 assists, that's not going to cut it for me. At this point in the season, I know he's a great goal scorer, but until he can expand his playmaking abilities, I pump the brakes a little bit on him as like a top 10, top 5 guy. He's very close, and he could very well prove me wrong in the playoffs, and you'll probably be getting texts from me, oh my gosh, Matthews. The talent level is there, but the overall talent plus what you're actually doing on the ice, I want to see a little more playmaking.
Okay. All right. I just wanted your defense on that. So let's move on now. And the other great team, which is crazy because I'm looking at the 2016 draft, which was when Austin Matthews was drafted, and he was number one. And number two, which I know not a lot of people follow along with the NHL draft, but it was Patrick Laine. I think that's how you say his name.
Yes.
And he was drafted by the Winnipeg Jets. So the other team that I know you were saying is really great from Canada right now. How crazy, before we actually talk about anything they're doing, but how crazy is it that Toronto and Winnipeg went from the number one and number two pick in the 2016 draft to now being two of the perennial best teams in NHL already?
It's really crazy, man. I did not expect either of them, and Winnipeg especially. Winnipeg has had talent over the years offensively, but defensively have been atrocious. And they just have struggled up until this year to really put it all together since moving from Atlanta to Winnipeg, and where they really belong, in my opinion. Winnipeg Jets never should have moved, but that's a whole nother discussion. They did. The Winnipeg Jets moved to Phoenix just for record. And again, the Coyotes have had a couple good years, but have also been scrubs a lot of years. No, Winnipeg, 34-15-9. Again, not counting. That might count tonight's games. So I'm not sure. When I pulled up the record, that's what it was. Second in the Central. Now I say second. They were tied with Nashville in points, but they had two games in hand. Nashville had two fewer games, so I gave Nashville.
And Nashville lost today to Detroit. So
yeah. So there's a chance. Only one game in hand. So, again, they're right there in their division. They got four studs at forward. Right winger Blake Wheeler, he's not a sexy superstar. Man, I'm trying to think of the NBA comparison for you, Travis. He's kind of like, it's not Tim Duncan level, but
Damian Lillard?
Yeah, like a Damian Lillard. Not sexy, but really good. 64 points in 58 games. Like, if I showed you those stats, you'd be like, oh, that's great. And I showed you it's Blake Wheeler, you'd be like, what? But no, the guy's good. 16 goals, 48 assists, plus 9. And really, one of the main leaders on that team. Mark Scheifele, very good playmaker. 45 points in only 42 games. There were some injuries there. He's a plus 13. He's their best center, and you got to have a great center to be good. And he's showing that when he's on the ice, Winnipeg is that much more dangerous. Patrick Laine, the man you mentioned, I don't like that he only has 44 points in 58 games. I'd like that number to be higher, but he does have 26 goals. So he's going to finish close to that 40 goal mark. He might not reach it, but still he's a stud. Nikolaj Ehlers, 41 points. He's a guy that always impresses me when I watch him, and he's definitely their best left wing. Defenseman Dustin Byfuglien, he's a tank. You don't have to watch too much of a Winnipeg game to notice him. The guy's a good offensive player, and just he's a tank. He's a big guy, likes to hit people. But really, the real reason why the Jets are any good is Connor Hellebuyck. He's been a complete surprise. Travis, this guy might win the Vezina. I didn't even really know who he was until this season, but he's 38-8, which is a great goaltending record. He has a 2.34 goals against average, which is excellent, a 923 save percentage, and 5 shutouts. The only guy who's ahead of him, really, statistically, is Vasilevskiy with the Lightning. This guy is a stud. And again, he's probably had a stud of the week in there that we've just missed, but I'm giving him his props now, Canada.
Nice.
He's, in my opinion, a guy that could make Winnipeg a threat to even win it all. Because if you get great goaltending, you get a hot goalie in the playoffs, they have enough offensive firepower to capitalize off that, and they're a physical team, which pays off in the Western Conference. They are exciting, and they have a great home arena advantage, a great fan base. So
awesome.
So Winnipeg and Toronto is the hope of Canada right now, and to a lesser extent. Or did you have something?
Well, I was just going to say we're running long now. So luckily for these teams, the bad teams are not going to get super shout-outs. But I do want you to continue to say the shout-out for the other playoff team from Canada. So let's go ahead and get into that.
Yes, I will. Calgary Flames. They are, last I checked, they were on the outside looking in, but only they were 2 points out or 1 point out. They're very much in the playoff mix. Johnny Gaudreau, who is an American-born player, and he's a guy that I would like to see play in the next Olympics if they bring these guys back. He is awesome. 68 points. He's third in the scoring race. Plus 18, just dynamite with the puck. A little guy. I don't know if you've watched him, Travis, but he's only about 5'9". But man,
I've seen a few highlights, yeah.
Yeah, he is an amazing puck handler, great playmaker, just fantastic player. And he's meeting his full potential at age 24. Johnny Hockey, as they like to call him. He is great. And Calgary's in the mix. I just don't think they're as strong all around as the other two teams they mentioned. I hope they get in, because it's good to have a couple Canadian teams in the playoffs, because your fan bases always show up, and it's awesome. The ugly.
Yeah.
I'll do a quick.
Just do a quick rundown.
Edmonton Oilers, dumpster fire season, wasted potential of Connor McDavid. He has to be fuming. Their goalie complained about the refereeing today. He might have some merit to his argument, but again, just a bunch of whiners outside of McDavid. They gotta revamp that team going forward. You can't have McDavid.
Hey, Draisaitl is pretty good too.
Draisaitl's great too. He's their Malkin, if you will, to McDavid's Crosby, but the rest of the team is awful, and they have to do something different. The Canadians are awful. I know Montreal, you guys are passionate as well, but
and they are one of the better historical hockey teams that there is, right?
Yes, they have the most Stanley Cups. Pacioretty and Pokanik, if they don't get traded during the deadline, I wouldn't be surprised if one or both of them get moved during the off season, because they have to do something different. The time is running out on utilizing Carey Price. Ottawa stinks. And they insist Erik Karlsson isn't available, but here's my controversial take on all this. If I was them, I would entertain offers. I get it. He's 27 years old. He still has good hockey in front of him. But he's a minus 25 right now. His trade value will never be higher. And here's the thing. He's going to demand that you make him the highest paid player in hockey, because he does so much for your franchise. But the thing is, as good as Karlsson is, he's not a perfect player. He's kind of, in some ways, Travis, the Russell Westbrook of hockey.
Ooh.
Great offensive player, but defense sometimes can be a defensive liability when he's not locked in. Westbrook can play good defense, but we know he can also kind of not focus on it at times. Same thing in hockey with Karlsson. Do you want to give this guy the max deal? And in hockey, Travis, the max deal is not like 5 years. It can be 10, 12 years. So do you really want to buy into this guy? I think not. I think you get the most you can for him in a trade. I know that sounds crazy. This is a team that went to Game 7 against the Pens. They were so close to reaching the cup. But as much as it's him, he is kind of that double-edged sword superstar. So I would trade him.
And let's talk about the last team.
Yes, very quickly. Vancouver, you're so bad. It's sad to see two great players like the Sedins have to play on that cesspool of a team. So Canada, you have two great ones, one good one, and four really bad ones. And
yeah, and the picture, unless Eddie has some of the Eastern Canada teams, the picture that's going to correlate to this podcast is probably going to be a Vancouver Canucks picture.
Oh.
So the Canucks have to get better. So that
yeah, they do. We maybe we should just feature Sidney Crosby so they know we're we have a good Canadian player on there.
Okay.
So yeah.
We're gonna keep going with the podcast, but we're gonna put a big kind of timestamp here so that our Canadian or non-Canadian listeners will know we're gonna make a little transition here. And we're going to talk about, just real quickly, obviously, the thing that is near and dear to mine and Eddie's heart. We've talked about Canada for so long, and we're actually going to make a Canadian transition here, but we're going to talk about UCF. And just to make it fair to the podcast, Eddie, let's continue with the Canadian transition into UCF. So tell us a little bit about the Canadian UCF connections that we have.
Yeah, so the most deeply rooted UCF Canadian connection that I'm aware of and that I witnessed personally was a man by the name of Keith Shalligan. Now, if you are a CFL fan, you might know who he is. And if you're a UCF fan, 2007 and before that, you also might know who he is. He's a UCF football alum. He's from Alberta. And he was a senior when I was a freshman at UCF. And he was a really solid player. Not a superstar, but he did get, like, second team Conference USA. He was an interior lineman and just a really blue-collar, almost had a hockey player mentality to football. I loved it. And he was part of a conference championship team. So he definitely is in UCF lore. And he currently plays for the Montreal Alouettes of the CFL and has carved out a nice career for himself. He played for the Blue Bombers of Winnipeg, the Ottawa Red Blacks, the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. He has had a really good career, and he's definitely, while other guys might be more stars, he's kind of been the most successful long-term Canadian football player to come out of UCF. So Keith Shalligan, salute to you.
Absolutely. And we talk a lot about Blake Bortles and now I'm blanking, sadly, because they're not in my notes. But all the UCF players that are in the NFL, we talk about them a lot, but we actually have some of our best players from college playing in the CFL, so that's really cool. And I want to start off with the names of the most recent Grey Cup, which is the Canadian Football Super Bowl. We had two Grey Cup champions in Troy Davis and Terrence Plummer, but then some also CFL connections that are great UCF legends: Quincy McDuffie, Joe Burnett, Brandon Alexander, and even Mike Sims Walker. So we have some great CFL connections out of UCF.
Yeah, we really do. And I know if you want to hear more about it in depth, I know the Nightline guys regularly tell you that he's got stats, how they're doing, all that. And again, you can find these guys if you're a UCF fan. You just Google them. And I'm sure you noticed this, Travis. I Google Brandon Alexander, and it's not just his UCF stuff that's coming up at the top, but it's his CFL stuff. And that was really cool. It's like, yeah, these guys are pro football players. We might have a different view of the CFL here in America, but it's the best league that is not the NFL. And
yeah, and I know that looking into this and after listening to some Nightline, Troy Davis and Terrence Plummer won the Grey Cup this year with, I think it was Toronto that they play for. But I believe on the other side, Calgary, was Joe Burnett or one of our other guys. And unlike the guys in the NFL, some of the guys in the NFL, these guys are quintessential parts of the teams that they play for. I mean, we're reading these names off these lists, and they're not like second string, third string players. These are starters. I know in Troy Davis, and I think even Terrence Plummer's view, these guys are starters that play multiple snaps and are really integral in winning a Grey Cup for these teams.
Yeah, I know Quincy McDuffie. I'm Facebook friends with him. He regularly posts highlights of himself. He still is running back kickoffs, man. Still running back punts, which is, it warms my heart because that takes us right back to our college days right there.
Absolutely. So let's go ahead and let's take us back to college and let's talk about UCF and college basketball. Like I said, we'll put a little timestamp so we can just shift the UCF players straight to here, but I don't want to leave it out of the podcast. So UCF basketball, we lost Taco Fall now, what, 4 or 5 games ago?
Yeah.
But we're, I don't want to say we're looking better, but we haven't really lost a step once Johnny Dawkins really got these guys working in. Like you said, we held SMU to 37 points, 17 points in the first half, 20 in the second half. And I know that there's a college basketball podcast on The Ringer, which we reference a lot because we listen to them a lot. They make a really big deal out of holding a team under 20 points and a half. Well, we just did it twice. We did it in both halves today against SMU. So what is it about UCF college basketball that even without our best defensive player, we're able to string together these wins and get it going?
Coach Dawkins he preaches defense, man. The whole team is built on it, that no matter how we're shooting, we need to defend. We need to have quick hands. We need to get in passing lanes. We need to stay in front of our man and make him earn his points. And it's awesome, man. Like, this UCF may never get the kind of talent. I say may never. We've come such a far way in all sports, even since you and I were students.
Yeah.
But again, I'm realistic. We might never get the kind of talent year in and year out that a Kansas gets, that a Duke gets, that a UNC gets. But if you can play great defense and this becomes the identity of your program, you're going to be in a lot of games. And you get a player like a BJ Taylor, you get guys like that that can put the ball in the hoop. You're going to be competitive, and we're seeing it now. This is the time of year when everybody's playing better defense. Well, it shows that our defense is better than the average team. It really is. We're able to lock in, and it's resulting in 3 straight wins. I heard too, Dawkins, there was a players only meeting before that Memphis game, and it's paying off. And obviously, the guy that responded the most was our stud of the week, AJ Davis. If AJ keeps playing this well, BJ Taylor looks fully healthy and he's scoring regularly big games, like, we're going to be a tough team. We're not going to be a team teams look forward to playing in that American Conference tournament, which, by the way, is in Orlando.
Yeah.
Again, money's a little tight here in the Melville household, but if we find a way to get to that final, I got to go, man. Like,
I don't think those tickets are really that bad. I'm not sure about the Orlando ones, obviously, but the whatever conference is out here that Long Beach State and Cal State Fullerton and those guys play in, I looked last year, and it was only about $40 for a ticket to the tournament games. So,
well, yeah, even if I got to eat ramen for a week, man, like,
yeah,
I would love, man, and UCF would, if there's one thing I can say about UCF, I was really disappointed with the attendance today against SMU, and you don't have to watch too many highlights to see why when you see that empty student section. I guess we didn't have Tide Pods back then, man, so I'll tell you what, we do know how to show up for big events. The NIT last year, we packed that arena out several times. And in that NIT, I guess the final to get you to New York, I mean, that was a sellout, storm the court, just crazy crowd. I have a feeling if we make a run, even our students, our alumni, we'll gobble up those tickets and we will pack out Amway and have fun with that, whoever that is, Cincinnati, Wichita State. You are in for a fight of your life if that happens. But now, with that said, we need to finish the rest of the season strong, and I don't know if that's where you're going next.
Well, kind of, yes, but like we said, UCF is looking almost better than they've ever looked historically from a full team perspective. Right. We've had guys like Jermaine Taylor who have been super studs. We've had Rompsa and Clanton, which have been really great players. But from a full team, we're one of the best teams that I've seen in a long time. However, the American Conference looks like the best American Conference that we've had ever since they became the American Conference. So realistically, I know you're talking about the final there, but what does it look like? I mean, we have Cincinnati, who finally lost their first game in conference. We have Wichita State, who, even though they have a down year, they're still playing really well. We have Houston, who is really surprising people. And then, of course, there's the regular, the UConns, the Tulsas, those types of the world. How hard would it be to get to this American final? Because it looks like we're going to have to do that if we're going to make it into the field of 68 or whatever the field is nowadays.
It would be really hard, man. We would have to play the way we're playing now. Plus, we'd probably need somebody else to emerge. It can't just be B.J. Taylor and A.J. Davis. We would need a guy like Deion Griffin to continue shooting the lights out of the ball. And he didn't do it today. But he would need to pretty much, you know, be hitting 40-50% of his threes every game for us to do that. We'd need guys like Georgie Muman to play well. Like, again, I'm not saying this is likely, but if you play great defense, like I said, the game will be close. And as long as you're not completely tanking it on offense, you're going to have a really good chance. Looking at the rest of the games remaining, we're at Tulsa. Tulsa's the team ahead of UCF right now. And I'm not sure if they played today or not. They might have. But they're 8-5. We're 8-6 in conference. And we're in the 5 spot. They're in the 4. Why is this important? Well, you want to be top 4 so that you can avoid – you get a first-round bye, essentially.
Yeah, you don't have to play that play-in kind of game.
Right. So you definitely want to avoid that, especially, you know, we're without Taco. So all these guys are pulling extra duty. You want them to be rested. Our remaining games on Wednesday, we're at Tulsa. That's a huge one. If we win that, we have a great chance. Then we're at Temple, who I know UCF handled Temple pretty well earlier in the year, but Temple's not a bad team, and going to Temple is always a test. So you have that next Sunday. Then on Thursday, March 1st, here's the big one, and hopefully our fans show up, man. This is on ESPN. We better pack the house for this one. Wichita's first ever game against Wichita State at UCF Arena, or CFE Arena, I should say. It's 7 p.m. on ESPN. The nation will be watching. We all talk about wanting to be Power 5. This is, you know, one of those games where you need to show up. So that'll be a tough one. And then at home against Tulane to end the year. So I expect Temple and Tulane, we should win those games. Tulsa is the toss-up. And Wichita State, I don't really expect to beat them, but at home with a big crowd, you never know.
And I'm sure Tulsa hopefully has at least Wichita State, Houston, or Cincinnati on their schedule soon. So if we drop Wichita State and they drop Cincinnati, I mean, we're right there. So we just have to beat them on Wednesday to really try to put that nail in the coffin and get that fourth seed.
Yes. So we, again, this is when college basketball gets really fun. It's not just UCF, it's Trae Young, Oklahoma, it's all these teams. This is definitely the best time for it.
Yeah, and I just, a real quick, a one-sentence thing, because it's so hard to play what ifs. It almost feels like you're wallowing in the past. But if we had a defense like this with a Jermaine Taylor type 2 minutes and under guy, what do you think we could do with something like that? I mean, you were live for Jermaine Taylor, and so getting to see this defense and keeping games close, and then what you got to see with Jermaine Taylor, how amazing would that be?
Oh, it'd be incredible. We would definitely be, I think we'd be as good as, if not better than, a Wichita State. I know that sounds crazy, because Wichita State's really good, but I think we'd be even better than them. The only team that would have a legit argument over us at that point would be Cincy. So, again, if you're top two in our conference, like, we would be a tournament team, and we'd be a scary team in the tournament that might win a couple games and make a run. But he was that good. He really was. Somebody posted on one of the groups we're part of that game, he put up the 45 when we only scored 66.
Yep.
But he was that good. Like, he single-handedly put us on his back and just time and time again just delivered amazing performances. And that, he made the NBA.
We weren't really great when we had him, but I remember, I don't know if I was in the fraternity at that point, so I don't know if I was watching with you for all of them, but I remember watching with you with some of them. And if it was a close game with a minute and a half left, that was the most confident that it wasn't CFE Arena, I don't think, at that point, but that was the most confident that we ever were as fans, that we were just going to win. I mean, we've struggled in close games before, but when we had him, we just knew we were going to win. And I feel like that's the closest UCF is going to get to these Dukes and North Carolinas and Kentucky kind of level, at least for the time being. So anybody else that was around in the 2007-2008 season, whenever Jermaine was there, I don't really know the exact time, but just appreciate what you were able to watch, because those are the things that Eddie was talking about, that we're not going to get those level of players all the time. So when we get them, definitely enjoy them.
Yeah, absolutely. The highlight that always stuck out for me, I think it was during that game he put up 45. He got a rebound. Jermaine was a great athlete, but he was only 6'4". He got a rebound. Like, he got the rebound, jumped, landed, then jumped right back up, just kind of straight up, and dunked over a guy who was like 6'10". And I was just like, what the heck did I just watch? Like, it's so hard to jump flat-footed and dunk, but that was the kind of athlete he was. And, yeah, it was really cool to watch him.
Absolutely. And me and Eddie could probably reminisce for days about all of the sports that we got to see. And maybe that'll be a special episode podcast in the future, just reminiscing on our years at UCF. But for now, let's shift back to the present, and let's talk about UCF baseball before we leave. They just got kicked off, and you were there. They've played two games now. They beat a really good, really, really, really good team, and then they lost to a good team, but Rice isn't a conference team anymore, right?
Correct. They still kind of own the Conference USA, but yeah, they're no longer.
But they are in, when we were in Conference USA, they were the team that we relied on to be good at baseball. So I know that Rice is good at baseball.
Oh, yeah.
Because the rest of the Conference USA wasn't, and we used to kind of cheer for Rice to be good at baseball just so the conference was good at baseball.
And when Steph was any good in Conference USA, Rice always would beat us. Like, that was our way.
Exactly. So go ahead. You were at the Virginia game, though, right? So go ahead and give us a recap of what you saw just from a team's perspective out there.
Yeah, I mean, we have some bats. We hit a couple home runs. Again, I'm still learning players' names and whatnot, and unlike football and basketball, they do not have their last names on the back of their jerseys.
Right.
But we definitely have guys who can hit. It's a talented team. I know that Greg Lovelady, our head coach, I guess they call it head coach rather than manager in college, he's the real deal. I've always been impressed by everything I've ever seen from this guy in an interview. He's recruiting well, and he has these guys in the mindset that we are going to make a run in Omaha. Like, that's the goal every year. But unlike the guy who preceded him, who would also say a lot of the same things, I think this guy just, I don't know, he just seems to be, he has a better feel for his team. He was willing to leave one of our long relievers out even to close the game, even after he pitched a couple innings before that. The guy was dealing, so he left him out there to let him close the game. And again, Virginia, really good team. We looked unfazed, but Lovelady told his team after that game that this is a great win, but it's just the opener. Like, you don't win regionals, you don't win super regionals, you don't make it to the College World Series in February. Like, we're just, this is good, every win counts, be proud of it, but know that there's a lot of work to be done. And obviously our guys are still learning the lesson. They lost a tough one to Rice today. Apparently we had the bases loaded at one point, didn't capitalize late in the game. Again, it's too early to tell, Travis. I've seen this story too many times that UCF baseball is really good. This is the year they're going to make a run. But we always seem to fall short in regionals. That's just kind of been our forte. Anything yet to tell me that's going to be different. However, we are the defending AAC champs. A lot of these guys returned from last season. It's a long year, and I do like, if you go through our schedule, it's a tough schedule. He wasn't afraid to schedule good teams early on. That we play Samford on Sunday, which is another Samford. You might think, oh, they're scrubs. No, they went to regionals last year. So he opened with three regional teams, one who was ranked. Like, he is not afraid to schedule teams that are going to challenge our guys to be on their toes and to play best baseball possible. So I like that a lot. I'm hopeful. I mean, we all should be. And they, you know, they're continuing to renovate the stadium. It's not done yet, but what was done looks great. I mean, they have a home field to be proud of, and I'll look forward to seeing how UCF does as the long college baseball season.
Absolutely, and I want to touch on a couple of things that you did say. UCF is in both a tough spot and a very rewarding spot, being where they are. So you're talking about how we seem to fail in regionals, and a lot of the reason, in my opinion, is that the regional hosts, there's eight super regional hosts that are the big time guys. They're the seeded teams, and usually Florida State and Miami are all in those top eight. Like, Florida as a state usually has three of the top 15, at least, teams in college baseball at the end of it. And that's where it's hard for UCF, because if we're not a host, because the committee in baseball, more so than any other sport, puts you regionally, we're going to end up in a Gainesville, Tallahassee, or Coral Gables regional. And that's really scary. But on the flip side of that, where I said that UCF has a good spot, because we play in Florida, we've seen from Gainesville, Tallahassee, and Coral Gables that the committee likes to reward Florida teams. They don't want to put college baseball regionals in Nebraska, for instance. That's just not where it wants to be, even though the road to Omaha, obviously, yeah, that's why I went with Nebraska.
They only want it to end in Nebraska,
right?
Regional.
But Florida tends to get kind of, I don't want to call it kind of collusion, but it seems that way in college baseball more so than any other sport. The committee tends to put all of the regional hosts are really great places to be, whether it be Cal State Fullerton out here in nice LA area or a Florida team. So UCF has that advantage to where if we can just be better than one of those other big three Florida teams, maybe we can host. And the, like you said, our preseason schedule, our pre-conference schedule is huge because we do play. Do we play all three of those teams? I know we play Florida and Florida State.
I don't know that also we host all three. We do host Florida. I know that for sure. The defense.
Okay.
And we do, I think we go to Miami. I don't think they ever come here. And Florida State, I'm not sure if they come here. But we do play.
So those are definitely.
And we play pretty much everybody else who's good in Florida. Stetson.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that's where UCF has to get over that hump. Because if you remember our very first episode of No Scrubs Allowed, we were talking to Ryan McGurra. And it was about college baseball. And we talked about how Florida was in the championship, I believe. Florida had made it that far. And Florida State had just gotten knocked out in the Super Regionals or in the College World. No, it was in the College World Series. So when you have Florida and Florida State making it to the College World Series pretty much every year, UCF has a lot bigger hill to climb than, say, a Cincinnati or any other team that's not in a place that is very used to winning in baseball. We have a lot steeper hill to climb than a lot of those other teams. So fans, I want you to be happy. I want you to expect an AAC championship. And like Eddie said, be hopeful. We have a team that can win a regional and super regional and make it to Omaha. But really pull for this team in the non-conference because that's where we are going to really set ourselves up. Because I think if we can host a Super Regional, I think we have just as good a chance as Florida or Florida State to make it to Omaha this year.
Absolutely. And, yeah, baseball, we don't have a baseball team in Orlando other than UCF. I don't even think we have a minor league team nowadays. So this is Orlando's – this is truly Orlando's hometown team. And – hey, you can go in the right field and drink beer. bring your cooler. Those guys were wild, by the way. They were the highlight of the game. The right fielder's name was Alex, and he must have said Alex 1,000 times over the course of the game. They were relentless. Those guys are great. Yeah, and 3,000 plus for a baseball game. It was a really fun atmosphere, and I was able to bring my daughter to it. So, I mean, it is family friendly. So, if you haven't been to a UCF baseball game, definitely check one out. I hope to go to at least another one this year. And, yeah, we'll see how our team does. I think we started the season ranked. I mean, that's when do we ever say that about the other two major sports? Football.
We'll be saying it next year.
Yeah,
I'll tell you
football,
that.
Football is going to change that for us, and I can't wait. That's going to be amazing. But again, basketball never started the season ranked, but baseball does. They're a really good team. Get out there and support them.
Absolutely. Well, I know it was a long episode, but like I said, we'll put the timestamp in. It'll almost be like two separate episodes because obviously not everyone wants to listen to UCF speak. But me and Eddie are going to continue UCF speak because that's the passion behind the podcast. So get out there, watch your teams, go Canada. Once again, if you listen this long, thank you so much for being our second best country by a large margin. And UCF, continue. Watch your baseball team. Watch your basketball team. Ride basketball until we're finally out of it. And do you have anything else before we get out of here, Eddie?
No, just remember, be a stud, not scrub.